This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. Last week, the City Council of Washington, D.C. banned the transport of certain hazardous materials through the nation's capital. This decision made D.C. the first city to require companies to reroute toxic cargo around its borders. The vote came just weeks after a ruptured train tanker leaked chlorine gas over the small textile town of Graniteville, South Carolina. The chemical spill there killed 9 people and injured 250 others. These recent events have sparked new debate over how to best move hazardous materials. Last month, more than 50 of the nation's mayors requested that the Department of Homeland Security notify them when hazardous materials move through their borders. But federal officials and railroad industry executives say that this early notification may fall into the wrong hands. And if other communities pass similar bans to D.C.'s, it would become impossible to ship vital materials anywhere. Later in the program, Texas comes up with the most ambitious highway project in half a century and a Shrove Tuesday pancake feast. But first, the transport of hazardous materials. Who should be responsible for the movement of chemicals, state and local officials or the federal government? What would you want to know when toxic materials are moving through your town? If this has been an issue in your community, join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is totn@npr.org. Joining us now to discuss the debate is Mark Abkowitz, a professor of civil engineering at Vanderbilt University and chairman of Visual Risk Technologies, a Nashville-based transportation risk management consulting firm. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I appreciate being on.
So before we start talking, I guess we have to start with some definitions. When we say hazardous material, we're not talking about exclusively explosives or something like that.
No, hazardous materials is a term that covers thousands of different materials, including waste, that we use routinely to make products that the American public benefits from day in and day out. There's an estimated 800,000 shipments of hazardous materials a day. They range from explosives to inhalation hazards like chlorine and ammonia. They include nuclear materials, and they also include small samples of pharmaceutical products and other things that are just being used for testing in various laboratories.
So those, you mean biohazards that I presume, a small vial of something that still could have some deadly pathogens in it?
They're just small samples that are used for research and development purposes and are often, shipped by normal, Federal Express, UPS types of environments.
Yeah. So what about stuff like gasoline, the stuff that we don't necessarily think of as hazardous material? Does that fit into that category?
Absolutely. Flammable liquids is what gasoline is classified under, and it's quite common to have tank trucks going through our communities that have a capacity of 6,000 or 7,000 gallons in them.
I see.
So, rail cars are more likely to carry about 30,000 gallons.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's sort of obvious that you don't want, just apart from anything else, you don't want these things tipping over and spilling out on you. But how has the debate about transporting these changed since the September 11th attacks?
Well, I think the biggest concern is that prior to September 11th, there was an effort on the part of government officials and emergency responders and communities to try to work more closely together and make information about hazardous materials more transparent to the process so that shippers and carriers of the material would be making the public more aware of where those products were moving and the public in return would be better prepared to deal with an emergency should one come up. With the September 11th event, security became kind of the ugly sister to safety, and a lot of the issues about transparency that would help with the cooperation between the various parties in making hazardous materials transportation safer became concern in terms of it being sensitive information that, if landing in the hands of the wrong parties, could actually, you know, lead to serious outcomes.
Yeah. But that's a heck of a trade-off, because you've got a unknown risk of terrorism, which I guess, you know, is hard to quantify. I shouldn't say unknown, but at least a risk that's hard to quantify, versus, you know, 40, 50, 60, 70 years experience of transporting things throughout this country with a known risk that you can deal with. So how do people make those trade-offs?
Well, I think you're hitting a very important button that we as a society and a government and industry are really grappling with right now. As you mentioned, we have a pretty long history of understanding how various modes of transportation operate and what tend to cause accidents. The terrorism scenario is very different, not only because someone is actually trying to do something intentional, but the types of materials that are not likely to cause problems and accidents, if used purposely, could end up being precursors to much more serious events. The other problem is that folks that have been working in the safety area and the folks that are working in the security area really approach the problems very differently. And so in some respects, we have two different systems emerging, one that's focused more on accidental events and one that's focused more on intentional events, and somehow we need to get through that and think more in terms of all hazards, because the American public ultimately is concerned about being protected from both man-made accidents and terrorist events and natural hazards.
Right, right. I think it's just a fascinating split that's taking place because of the, you know, it's sort of like the concern. I shouldn't maybe say, but the concern du jour. I mean, it's what's uppermost in people's mind. And yes, I think your point is an important one. Well, anyway, we should listen to what our callers have to say. David in Wilson, North Carolina, welcome to the program.
How are you today?
I'm fine. How are you?
Doing good.
Good. So what's your question?
Well, I'm actually a truck driver, and I think this whole scenario would slow my life down.
Which scenario is that?
If I had to check in with every state, if I was hauling hazardous materials.
Uh-huh. But do you currently haul hazardous materials?
It's mostly adhesives.
Uh-huh.
And it's hazardous because you can't let it get too cold.
I see. But, I mean, you're saying, I mean, obviously, if you had to carry some sort of a, you know, electronic chip and it was just read by some electronic device as you travel down the highway, that wouldn't be a burden to you.
No, but if I had to call and wait for verification before I can enter a state, that would lower my income and a waste of time.
Well, that's an interesting problem. Thanks for that call. Mark Abkowitz, what about that? Is there concern that the reporting requirements would slow down the movement of commerce?
Well, if the wrong programs were implemented, that could certainly happen. One of the pieces of language in most of the legislation that you see, at least in the safety side, and I think ultimately security has to consider this as well, is that these considerations need to be performed in such a way that they do not represent an unreasonable burden to commerce. So we've got to come up with sort of rational, practical ways of implementing these solutions. One area where, in responding to the caller, one area where there's a lot of promise is some of the new technologies that are being experimented with right now. There's, as you mentioned, there's a number of electronic devices there that are tied into central dispatch systems that enable shippers and carriers today to know exactly where products are at any given time. And if that information could be shared through, security firewalls to appropriate responders and officials in various places, I think the technology is there to do that in a fairly cost-effective way. I think the real question is it would be very costly and very unwieldy to try to do that for 800,000 shipments a day. But if there's a subset of those shipments that, either because of the size of the shipment or the level of hazard that they present, that's probably where we should concentrate our attention.
Okay. Let's take a call from John in San Antonio, Texas. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm calling because we've had about five different wrecks all on Union Pacific Rail here in San Antonio. And one of those, there was a chlorine gas, a big dump. Almost all these wrecks were derailments, by my, if I recall correctly. The one in the southwest part of the county actually killed a family that was several hundred yards away. I think it was two members of a family. A number of people are still sick. Although it was a rural, semi-rural part of the county, the gas was such that it drifted northwest all the way up into an area where we have two major theme parks. And I think the city, and it, since then there's been five other wrecks, and the city's been very upset. The county's been very upset. I think the biggest thing is we don't have any federal oversight putting any discipline in the federal oversight of these railroads. They're very powerful. They have a lot more political juice than, say, Bexar County Judge Nelson Wolf does. And granted, it's just a few lives, but, you know, if it's your life or my life, it's pretty important to us. And something has to be done, worked out, something sensible, albeit to help to not hinder commerce, but to do nothing would be totally irresponsible.
Appreciate that point, John. Well, what about that, Mark Abquitz? Is there a problem in federal oversight, or are there just, you know, so much traffic and there's just going to be accidents will happen?
Well, I think the caller's raised an important distinction between the way we regulate our highways and our railroads. The highways are publicly owned and subject to government oversight, you know, as a public authority. Railroads are privately owned, and so we have a kind of a situation of where do you draw the line between what the government tells a private organization to do and what it's entitled to do on its own, and that's a real problem. I think most folks would agree that, you know, the railroad industry historically has been able to avoid being regulated to the same degree that the highways are, but in turn, I've seen a lot of effort on the part of the railroad industry for their own reasons to try to improve on their safety and security. And in some areas, they've actually gotten out in front.
Mark Abquitz, we have to take a short break. We'll continue our discussion about transporting hazardous materials. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Joe Palca. In Washington, we're talking with Professor Mark Abquitz of Vanderbilt University about moving hazardous materials safely around the country. Do you think there are enough safeguards on moving toxic materials? Give us a call. Our number is 800-989-TALK. Our email is totn@npr.org. And Mark Abquitz, I know you have to go, but I just wondered if there was a point that you were finishing there about the safety of the regulation. I mean, does the government have a bigger role here, or should it, or does it need to, or are things working pretty much okay?
I think things are improving. I mean, there's always this question of how safe is safe enough. I think the railroad industry is, if you look at what they're doing and you look at the accident statistics, I think that it's getting better. The problem is that when there is an accident involving a spill on a rail car, it's a larger quantity of material and it's more dangerous. And so when those events do occur, they tend to be more dramatic. And it's not all that different from when we kill 200 people on an airline crash versus one or two in a highway crash. But if you look at it over the course of a year, hundreds of people die on airplanes each year, and 40 to 50,000 people die on highways.
Well, it's, yes, and as you, as one of the callers said, it matters a lot when you're relations or you yourself are one of those people, but I know in public policy you have to make those tough choices. Anyway, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Mark Abquitz is a professor of civil engineering at Vanderbilt University and chairman of Visual Risk Technologies, a Nashville-based transportation risk management consulting firm. He joined us by phone from his office in Nashville, Tennessee. As mentioned earlier, last month, 51 mayors sent a letter to Homeland Security Secretary Tom Ridge asking that they be notified when hazardous materials are shipped through their cities. Bob Young, the mayor of Augusta, Georgia, was one of those mayors. He joins us now by phone from his office in Augusta. Welcome.
Joe, good afternoon. And just coincidentally, as we're speaking, a freight train is going right by my office building, and there are tank cars of hazardous material being towed by the two engines.
So, I mean, you think that local officials should be notified when these things are coming through? How would that help?
It would help in the response to these accidents. We appreciate the fact that there are railroads and that there are chemicals that are needed to drive our economy, and the chemicals are going to have to be moved around. We recognize that. And it's going to be difficult to create an environment where absolutely no rail accident is ever going to happen. We know there will be accidents. But what we want is an environment that is safe as we can possibly make it, and to give first responders the best information they can get in a timely manner. When the train derailment happened in Graniteville, South Carolina, in January, and Graniteville is about 10 miles from downtown Augusta. Our first responders were involved in the response to that. That accident happened at 2:38 in the morning, but it was not until as late as 3:15, more than a half hour later, that it was confirmed that there was chlorine gas leaking from that accident. If we had had prior notification, the first responders would have known immediately what was on that train and what the potential consequences would be.
But have you got the infrastructure in place, for example, that if you got this notification, you would have it in the fire stations and other hazardous response places so that, you know, is the infrastructure there to even make use of the information? Because a lot of times I know it's a communication breakdown even when the information is available.
Well, here again, I don't think any information system would be foolproof either, Joe, but we notify communities across this country now when nuclear waste is shipped to the repositories. There is a way to do it. There is a way to do it safely and securely. There's a way to make this information available on a need-to-know. There's no reason why we can't do this with the technology we have today to make this information available to communities who are going to host in transit the freight shipments by rail of hazardous materials. I'm convinced there's a way to do it.
Well,
and there's a way to do it in a useful format, so it'll be available to our first responders.
Okay, but the other objection, or it's not an objection, the other concern that's been raised is the possibility that, you know, making this information freely available to mayors and first responders and people like that around the country will also make it easier for people with nefarious purposes to get their hands on it. And so they will know exactly where the train of hydrofluoric acid or chlorine gas, where it is, and can use it to their advantage.
Well, I would say that concern is really not based in fact. Information like this would be made available to people on a need-to-know basis. And certainly with the information now on nuclear waste, typically it's handled through the state emergency management agency offices. They have oversight and control of the information. I don't think you're looking to put this in the hands of every mayor and every politician, every newsroom in the country. What you want to do is make it available and have it there for those who have a need to know. Indeed, cities and counties across this country every day are handling very sensitive information from the Department of Homeland Security, the FBI, and all other kinds of agencies, and we handle it without compromise. So security is not an issue. In fact, one railroad representative expressed his concern about potential security and related to me what happened when information like this got out in the public domain. But it turns out the information was not released by a terrorist. It was released by a disgruntled railroad employee.
All right. Well, let's see if any of our listeners have calls for Mayor Bob Young or just a comment on this topic. Let's first go to Ron in Jackson. Is that Michigan or Mississippi?
Michigan.
Jackson, yep. Michigan. Welcome to the program, Ron.
Thank you. I wanted to make reference to your previous caller, the professor from Vanderbilt.
Sure.
Basically, he was talking about the difference between rail regulation and highway regulation.
Uh-huh.
And he didn't point out that the railroads are regulated as far as safety and issues by the Federal Railroad Administration. They have inspectors countrywide that have the various disciplines that are used on the railroad, such as track inspectors, car inspectors, locomotive inspectors, rules inspectors, and they monitor the railroads all the time. They have a hazardous materials inspector, and they are federal officers, have the right to stop a train and check to see if they have the proper paperwork on there for the hazardous materials that they're required to have in their possession that shows the position of any hazardous materials in their train, et cetera.
So you think the inspection is adequate as it stands?
I think the Federal Railroad Administration does a fine job. There may be a need for improvement in some areas, but I wanted to point out that there is regulation of the railroads regarding the movement of hazardous materials and how they operate, even though they are private companies.
Okay, Ron, thanks for making that point. Mr. Mayor, I wonder if I can come back to you and just say, is the federal government's role in regulating the trains, is that not adequate? Isn't it enough for them to say, we take care of this, and if there's a problem, we'll get in touch with you?
Well, the railroad monitoring system is more for what's being moved around and how is it being moved.
Mm-hmm.
It's not set up for that immediate response to an accident, or in the case of Graniteville, a catastrophic accident.
Right.
At some point, the Federal Railroad Administration will show up, the EPA will show up, everybody in the world will show up. I've got a list of 3 pages of responders that came and participated in the Graniteville accident. What we as city officials are concerned about is that immediate response. We're on the front lines. We are the people who have to go when the alarm is sounded, and we've got to have the best information to do it. And I would submit that Senator Schumer and Senator Graham both recognize this, because in a bill they prepared to improve railroad safety last week, a bill they filed, they include in it a section on prior notification for the communities to make the information available.
Just one other quick question, sir. Is there any chance that your city would go the route that D.C. has gone, Washington, D.C., and what do you think of the Washington ban on moving these materials through the city?
Yeah, that's a very interesting action taken by the D.C. Council, and let me say the U.S. Conference of Mayors has not taken a position on that while we have on prior notification. Just as a mayor who has these shipments who come through the middle of my city, I don't know that that solves a problem. From my view, it moves a problem. It would take the material out of my city and perhaps move it to somebody else's jurisdiction. I don't think that would be helpful for the other jurisdiction. And since you're involved in interstate commerce, I'm sure that there's going to be some legal challenge to this. So I'm sure mayors will be monitoring what's going on with the D.C. Council's action. But what we've got to do is look for ways to minimize the opportunity for an accident, and then the best way we can is to shore up our first response capability. And the Department of Homeland Security and DOT last summer published in the Federal Register a notice where they've asked for comment on how they can improve rail safety in the country. In fact, the Association of American Railroads prepared a classified security plan that identifies risks and security measures shortly after the 9/11 attacks. And I think it'd be helpful for those of us in whose jurisdictions the trains operate that they share some of that information with us. It could be helpful to us.
Well,
much of the information we get is historical data. I've got one report from one rail company it's called the Hazardous Materials Density Study Program. They do it every year, and it says there were 5,000 separate shipments on their tracks that came through my city in 2003. And it said this information is put together for use for emergency response and for planning purposes. Yet my responders say they have never seen a copy of this report from that railroad until I showed them one about 2 weeks ago.
Well, Mayor Young, I'm going to thank you for your time and invite you to keep listening, because we're about to talk to somebody from the Association of American Railroads. But for now, I'd just like to thank you for joining us.
Joe, thank you so much. And we as mayors and city officials look forward to engaging the railroads and the government in trying to put together the best system we possibly can. Nobody's fighting with anybody. We're trying to work together.
Okay. Well, I'm sure your message will get through, because, first of all, I'll let everybody know that Bob Young is the mayor of Augusta, Georgia, and he joined us by phone from his office in Augusta. And joining us now is Edward Hamburger, the president and CEO of the Association of American Railroads, and he joins us by phone from Jacksonville, Florida. Welcome.
Good afternoon. Glad to be part of the program.
So did you hear Mr. Young, Mayor Young's comments just then?
And I was able to catch just the last couple of minutes, and let me just start by thanking him and reiterating his view that no one is fighting with anybody, that we need to address this issue cooperatively. It's what our industry tries to do. In fact, I was just taking a look at some statistics. The Class 1 railroads in the United States last year, in conjunction with the chemical companies, our customers, actually trained 20,000 emergency responders around the country. And it is our view that it is that kind of cooperation that is necessary. Number one, of course, we want to make sure that in everything we can do, that no accidents occur, but when they do occur, that the as the mayor so well put it, that the people on the front line are trained and understand what kinds of materials are coming through their jurisdiction so that they know how to respond properly and quickly.
We're talking about the transport of hazardous materials around the country, something that has to happen if the country's business is going to take place, and we're talking about the best way to do it. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. You know, we were also talking with Mayor Young about the ban that the D.C. City Council has recently enacted, where it says, you know, we don't want these materials coming through our cities at all. And you issued a statement, or your organization did, saying that ban is a regrettable act. Can you tell us why?
Well, I think the mayor put his finger right on it. The rerouting of hazardous materials does not eliminate the hazard. It does not eliminate the threat. What it merely does is move the threat from one jurisdiction to another, and I think he was very astute when he made that observation. And in fact, what we believe is that the shipments that are moving throughout the country right now are moving on in generally the most direct route on our best rail lines, and to move it willy-nilly around local jurisdictional barriers that have been erected just means that that material will be moving and over more line and be exposed more, and more people will be exposed rather than just getting it quickly from where it is manufactured to where it's used. And so you're not eliminating, as he put it, you're not eliminating the risk. You're just merely transferring it from one jurisdiction to another. And in fact, we think that rerouting increases the risk by making it move more circuitously and oftentimes through jurisdictions that maybe do not have the level of emergency response training that we're able to give on those routes where we know the material is moving.
Okay, let's take a call now. Let's go to Scott in Fremont, California. Scott, welcome to the program.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I'm a locomotive engineer, and I think that there's three basic problems. I think it could be the hazardous material could be hauled more safely if the hazardous cars, the most dangerous ones in particular, were kind of grouped together, and you had a train that's pretty much dedicated to hazardous waste. Too often we have hazardous cars mixed in with this regular freight, and the placement of cars can be very crucial. And that brings up my other point, which is the railroad's in a mass hiring mode right now, and a lot of inexperienced railroaders are being hired. I've been working for 28 years, and when I hired out, freight trains all had five-man crews. Now it's two-man crews, and when I hired out, at least two of the guys would be experienced, but now you can have two inexperienced railroaders, and it's really crucial to know all aspects of railroading. It's just hard to get it to sink in, and if you've been working for less than a couple of years, you may inadvertently pick up cars in the wrong position or not have the proper paperwork.
Okay.
And it's just, and the other part, my other point would be that we are on call, and there's many times we get called in the middle of the night with no warning and no sleep, and a tired railroader would just add to the problem of hauling this hazardous waste around.
Scott, thanks for that comment. Edward Hamburger, briefly, any response to what Scott has to
say?
Well,
sure. I think, and Scott, thanks. Thank you for the work you do for our industry out there in California. One of the issues that Scott just mentioned was grouping them together, and from a safety standpoint, I'm not sure what the impact of that would be. From a security standpoint, it seems to me that we need to take a very close look at whether or not we want to have a lot of hazardous materials moving on dedicated trains, that those who might view hazardous material rail tank cars as a terrorist target would then be able to say, well, I know when it's moving, there's going to be a lot of it, and I think it would bear some study and some thinking about whether or not, instead of improving safety and improving security, we'd just be painting a big bullseye on a train that is composed primarily of hazardous materials.
We have to end our conversation there. Edward Hamburger is the president and CEO of the Association of American Railroads. He joined us by phone from Jacksonville, Florida. When we come back from a short break, how Texas plans to supersize its highways and how East Lansing plans to celebrate Shrove Tuesday with pancakes. I'm Joe Palca. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.